Hello, all sentient beings, and welcome to Transmissions Alt Mode, where we talk about all news, comics, and media related to the... On this episode of Transmissions Alt Mode, we are joined by Dr. Pants as we review Dreamwave's Transformers Issue 3. We look at some new images of the Tiger LCD Transformers Generation 2 game, and it looks like a new Transformers animated prequel movie is in the works. Today is Friday, May 8th, 2020, and this is episode 180 of Transmissions Alt Mode.
Welcome to Transmissions Alt Mode, the podcast that asks you to fight for justice. I'm your host, Charles, a.k.a. Big C, and I'm joined by the excellent Transmissions team. Jeremy, a.k.a. Yakko.
Hey, how's it going?
The perfectly pleated Dr. Pants.
I just got done ironing.
And Daryl, the Cybertronian Beast.
Or did you just get done being ironed?
Okay.
Let's talk Transformers.
I'll practice I do my own. What does that mean?
I do my own ironing, whatever that means.
Don't quit your day job, Daryl.
It can't all be gold.
We welcome again Dr. Pants, a.k.a. Scott, a.k.a. Frank, a.k.a. Steve. check out this week's episode of Transmissions for more on Scott joining the Transmissions family, the expanding and growing Transmissions family. We are still eagerly awaiting Yoshi's return, so we're bringing in some help to help us out while he is unable to be with us. But Yoshi's still here, so you might actually hear him on this show a couple of times. So we got some special commentary from Yoshi, so stay tuned for that. And as always, we start off the show by thanking our Donatrions, those lovely people who give us money on Patreon and PayPal. And thank you, Dr. Pants, for being one of them. And you guys help the show keep going and keep running. So if you would like to become a Donatrion, just go to transmissionspodcast.com/support. And there you'll find links to sign up. And you can also help with the show by buying merchandise from our T Public store at transmissionspodcast.com/shop. And at our friend K-Girl store at tpublic.com/user/superstarK. So you can check out our shirts. We've also got mask designs. Now, all of our designs that can be turned into masks. So if you want to buy some masks from our TeePublic store, you can do that. And TeePublic, for every mask that you buy from TeePublic, they will donate a medical-grade mask to charity. So it's a good deal. Warning, there is a bit of a lead time, a bit of a wait time on getting your mask. So, you know, just be aware of that. Maybe this is your backup mask, not your main mask.
Or your summer mask.
Fair enough.
It's going to be great for conventions. When they return and they're likely going to have... We didn't even talk about it in the other show because Daryl and I recorded about TFCon. But when conventions come back, they're going to probably require masks and have some awesome transmissions masks.
All right. We also have in a couple of days after the weekend, next Monday, we will have Empire of Rust episode 23, Between a Magnum and a Hard Place. So that'll be up this Monday, May 11th. So you will discover the fate of Zephyr, the character who was he got put in a rough spot last episode. So you'll have to listen, find out his fate. And the fate of all the characters in Empire of Rust. And also want to give congratulations to our April Toy Hacks winner, Travis. So that was drawn in the last Transmissions episode on Wednesday. So congratulations, Travis. And please enjoy your $10 Toy Hacks gift code. Mm-hmm. Now let's start off the show by talking about some comics news. Just one item this week. So Amazon has a listing for a pre-order of the Transformers 84 limited series that was supposed to kick off in May. I think it's going to be delayed like a lot of comics. But if you are waiting for the trade, that should probably not be affected because the trade is looks like it's going to be out next February, February 16th, 2021. So you can get all the issues. It's a 4-issue series, plus issue zero that was published last year is also going to be included in this trade paperback. So,
and remember, they have the trades going through a different distribution.
Yes. And this is, this Transformers 84 is a kind of prequel to the Marvel Transformers series from the 80s. It's written by Simon Furman and has art by Guido Guidi and colors by John Paul Bove. So just awesome all around art team. You should really check it out. We're going to be reviewing it when it hopefully comes out in the next couple of months when comic distribution resumes. So we're looking forward to it. All right, so let's move on to our comic review. And this week we are doing another classic Dreamwave Transformers review. This is Transformers Generation 1, Volume 1, Issue Number 3. And this is the third issue of the first Dreamwave miniseries. This was retroactively named Prime Directive, but at the time it did not have a title. But we'll call it Prime Directive Number 3. This is written by Chris Saracini, pencils by Pat Lee, inks by Rob Armstrong, Eric Sander, Ferdinand Poblete, backgrounds by Edwin Garcia, colors by Ramel Sunga, Gary Young, Alan Wang, Talent Pun. Talent Pun? Okay. Flats by Kenny Lee, letters by Dreamer Design, and prepress Kello Graphics. So I think here, this is the first hint that you see of the Dreamwave art house. Maybe the art isn't all being done by Pat Lee very much. I mean, you usually don't see the art being broken down by backgrounds, inks, and pencils. It's usually, it's usually one person does all the lines, or one person does the pencils and then one person does the inks, but calling out the background separately, that's a bit weird.
I think also we had that last week too.
Oh, did you? Okay.
I just remember those long credits.
Four people to do the colors and then flats separate from the colors. That's also unusual. So yeah, it seems like a lot of people are pitching in. I hope all those people got paid. Although
it was still early.
But I mean, I can see Pat Lee saying, hey, why don't you help out with this? You'll get a credit in the comic. Can't pay you, but you'll get a credit.
Mm.
So I don't know. But yeah, I mean, and this Dreamwave was also selling like gangbusters this first miniseries. So I think this number three was also hit number one of the charts for that month. Like something. Yeah. Over 131,000 copies. So yeah, they were still riding high with this Generation 1 series. So, Scott, we haven't had you on for the first two issues. You did send in a voicemail after we reviewed the first issue. So, what are your thoughts on this Dreamwave series coming in? I assume you've already read the first two issues to catch up, and now that we're going into issue three. So, how are you feeling on this?
It's taking me back because This was what got me into reading comics quite a bit, and I loved it when it first came out, and I have not looked at it probably since, oh god, like 2005, 2006. So going back, it was just a trip back, and I'm enjoying it. Like, looking at the art now, it's like, oh, that's not appropriate Transformer anatomy. They're robots, but still, that doesn't work like that. But overall, I'm enjoying it, and I've got some thoughts on this issue as to why I really liked it, but the one thing I wanted to bring up is I got into this after they were on the second miniseries, and I had no idea this was even coming out, so I just picked up every issue I could. I did not realize there were two separate miniseries, so I had issue one from the first, issue two from the second, and I could not figure out why the stories never lined up.
That's funny.
So, but looking at these covers, it's just a great little nostalgia trip, and I'm really glad that you guys are doing this, and I'm glad to be here for this one.
Cool.
Dreamwave, Pat Lee, stuff aside.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's talk about the covers. We've got two covers, one of the Autobots, and it's a good portion of the Minibots. Not all the Minibots, but, you know, all your favorites. There's no Windcharger. I'm kind of surprised Windcharger didn't make the cut for the Minibots there. And then cover B is the Decepticons, and it is the Insecticons, the original three Insecticons, Bombshell, Kickback, and Shrapnel. These both are credited to Pat Lee. That's all I'll say. So, Scott, which of these covers would you pick of these two?
I'm a huge fan of the Insecticons, so that's the one that I would pick, and that's the one I own. So I'm perfectly happy with that particular cover. I love that dark design, and like I said, I love the Insecticons, and I think they just look really cool here.
Nice. Daryl, which cover are you picking?
I don't see Tailgate on this Minibots cover either, so he's not there. But I think I probably bought the Insecticons cover at the time, but I like the colors used on the Autobots one. So I like the Autobots one.
All right. I mean, I will say this, the Autobots one, I think they're all Minibots from just season one and season two. So Tailgate was technically season three. So
oh, now you're coming out with the qualification. All right.
Well, I mean, like I said, Windcharger isn't there, so it's not all of them. So
you don't have to make excuses for Pat Lee.
There's no bubble jumper there.
No, that you're right. You're right. Jeremy, which cover are you liking?
I'm probably going to go with the Autobot one just because that's the one that like I got. I think I got the retail one, like that one at retail, but also the Australian book I got signed by Dan Gilvezan was this cover. So it has like nice memories associated with it. Might have been the first comic I ever got signed.
I'm a bit torn because I really like the colors on the Autobot cover, but I like the Insecticon cover just because it, you know, it has a background and it I think the bodies are better proportioned than some of these Minibots here. So I guess I'll pick the Insecticon one.
You almost sounded disappointed about that.
Well, I mean, I really like the colorful Minibots, but there's just so their proportions are off. Some of the faces are off, and you know, just makes me a little sad.
And they didn't pay anyone to do a background.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's get into the story. The U.S. military has brought Optimus Prime, Spike, and the Autobots to the site of the oil refinery in northern Canada that was recently attacked by Lazarus's mind-controlled Transformers. Prime surveys the aftermath with dismay. He asks who did this, and Spike answers, Transformers. Not just Decepticons, both Autobots and Decepticons were involved, laying waste, hurting, and killing humans. Prime argues that they must be under some sort of control, but Spike angrily replies that it doesn't matter. The Transformers and their war are a threat to all life on Earth, just like his dad Sparkplug originally thought. Spike leaves Prime alone with his thoughts. General Hallow approaches Prime and tells him not to take it personally. After all, some people don't understand that to gain power, sacrifices must always be made. Prime is taken aback by the general's comments. Prime asks if he thinks the Autobots' war with the Decepticons was just about power. Hallow replies, of course, what else? And Prime answers, maybe it is Hallow who doesn't understand. The discussion is cut short as Hallow receives intelligence from Department of War Technology headquarters. They found the location of Lazarus's base. There's been some kind of explosion which has disrupted their stealth cover and exposed them to satellite surveillance. As Hallow prepares to issue orders, Prime grabs him and lifts him up by the jacket, yelling into Hallow's comm, "Where is it?" It's the last thing the DWT tech hears before he suffers substantial hearing loss, but he gets the message and conveys the coordinates, just south of their current location in the Northwest Canadian Territories. Optimus rallies the Autobots with a speech about fighting for justice, asking them to come with him and save the Earth again. Of course, all the Autobots are in. Before they go, Spike tells Prime to wait for backup from the military, but he refuses. Spike's words hit Optimus hard, and he resolves to put an end to the threat of the Decepticons without risking any more human lives. And with that, he gives the order. Autobots, roll out. At the former base of would-be villain mastermind Lazarus, Megatron is taking care of business. Megatron was never in Lazarus's control and was playing possum the whole time. Lazarus is now his pet with an iron leash around his neck. Megatron gloats over the human's hubris in daring to think he could control the Transformers. Now that the tables have turned, it's time to put Megatron's plan into action. He orders the recently repaired Seekers, Starscream, Thundercracker, and Skywarp to stop playing with the bodies of the deactivated Autobots and assemble in the main room. Starscream is looking forward to more fun from Megatron's latest evil scheme. In the main room, Soundwave has hooked several of the other deactivated Autobots up to a machine pulsing with pink energy. Megatron gives the order, and Soundwave throws a switch. A metallic substance oozes from the energy machine, covering the floor. Megatron thrusts his human prisoner forward to demonstrate the effect of the substance as it begins to engulf him. Lazarus's organic matter is cyberformed into Cybertronian metal. As Megatron laughs at the audacity of the now-dead Lazarus, Soundwave reports that Optimus Prime and the Autobots are converging on their location. Megatron smiles and relishes the coming conflict. After all, his plan is in motion and the Autobots are already too late. As the Autobots arrive and transform from their vehicle modes, Prime beholds the growing, creeping metallic mass emanating from Lazarus's base. Prime reacts with horror as Megatron appears to confront his nemesis. Megatron offers Prime a speech of his own, telling him the humans aren't worth all the trouble. Megatron figures since they're stuck on Earth and can't return to their home on Cybertron, he's going to bring Cybertron here. All it will cost is all the organic life on Earth. Prime draws his weapon and vows to stop him, but a blast from Prime's laser rifle is completely ineffectual on the growing cyberformed metal consuming the Earth. Megatron laughs at Prime's futile effort, and he has one more surprise. The Dinobot Grimlock has renounced the Autobot allegiance and now sides with Megatron. Grimlock was disillusioned by the fact that humans were willing to use the Transformers to turn on their own kind and kill each other. So what's the point of continuing to fight for them? But this only strengthens Prime's resolve to stop Megatron here and now. The battle is joined as the Autobots and Decepticons trade blaster fire. Their fierce fight disrupts the unstable ground and ice beneath them, plunging the combatants into a deep crevasse. Above, a U.S. chopper carrying General Hallo and Spike arrives on the scene to witness the conflict below. Hallo radios headquarters with new intelligence. The Transformers are no longer being controlled, so it's time for Phase 2, Operation Cleanup. Spike doesn't like the sound of that and asks what they're doing. A guard restrains him as Hallo's chopper opens a bay to drop a large bomb on the Transformers, all of the Transformers below. Megatron sees the human surprise attack coming while he's still struggling with Prime. He has just enough time to tell Prime, "I told you so," before the bomb detonates on everyone's heads, Autobots and Decepticon alike. To be continued. So, since I wasn't on last week, I listened to you guys review issue 2. And yeah, I agreed with the general consensus that it was a bit of an improvement on issue 1. I think this was definitely also an improvement just because it had more. It was just Transformers mostly. You know, we get the Autobot Decepticon conflict reigniting here. The art is pretty good. I think all the Transformers are rendered pretty well. Although the battle scene, I think I take issue with some of the, I guess for lack of a better word, camera placement. Like, too many really close-up shots that don't really show what's going on and make it a little bit hard to follow the action. But other than that, I think for the most part, everyone is rendered pretty well. The dialogue is pretty terrible, at least in my opinion. Megatron is kind of a mustache twirling villain here. Prime is a little bit like, he sounds a little bit anime, you know, too anime for me, you know, for great justice. I mean, it reminded me of the All Your Base or Belong to Us game. You know, that game where the was really badly translated and the character keeps talking about for justice, we must fight for justice. And that was a little just meh. And the whole reasoning about, oh, humans decided to use Transformers to fight a war, so therefore all humans are trash. I mean, that reasoning just feels weird and illogical. But I mean, I can see Megatron trying to use that against him. But Grimlock's turn. This was also, I think this was a controversy even back in the day, because I remember collecting this issue when it came out, and you know, looking on the fan boards and people complaining about Grimlock basically becoming a Decepticon for a really flimsy reason, and not liking that. And I still don't like it 20 years later. So, but I mean, but you know. This was still like, you know, this was the only Transformers game in town. So we were pretty excited to still see Transformers coming back and see in issue 3. Now we fully have Transformers, not just, you know, the hints and the little, you know, shadows and foreshadowing. But now we've got full on Autobot Decepticon action. So that was an improvement. So, Daryl, what do you think of this issue?
I thought it was okay. There was a lot of talking between the human characters. I thought, you know, definitely more Transformers than the last two issues. But you know, the discussions with Spike and Optimus at the start, and then Hallow with Optimus and Megatron and whoever the hell he kills, I can't remember. That's the business guy.
Lazarus.
Yeah, the business guy that's doing all the auctioning at the beginning, right? So, yeah. So, I mean, there's a bunch of humans in there. The disassembly or the, you know, the Decepticon seekers, you know, playing with the disembodied pieces of the Autobot characters is just kind of a weird image to see. I don't know whether in my headcanon, whether that's something that I think that they would do. I think that they would probably just, you know, tear them apart and just, I don't know whether they'd play with them like this. It's definitely a weird image. Go ahead. You want to correct me on something? Go nuts.
No, I was just going to say, I was going to say, that it felt like at least their vision of the Decepticons is that they're sadists. Like both Megatron and the Seekers seem to be, they enjoy causing pain to other characters.
Yes. So. And I would agree with that. Yeah, sure. Previous issues, I've actually enjoyed some of the odd camera angles. Like I commented on last issue with the angle that you had where there was the focus was on the human characters and Prime just stepped over them and continued on. I kind of like that. You've got a whole page here of the Autobots approaching the Decepticon base, and they're just kind of just barely coming into sight, and then they're in sight, and then, you know, everything starts to transform, and then they're just running at the end, and I kind of like that. That was a neat little progression for a page. Mm-hmm. And that I like, you know, I like some kind of, you know, you don't see that an awful lot. You definitely don't see a lot of transforming in modern Transformer comics, which is a shame. And here in one page, you got, you know, six characters transforming. So that was nice. So, the fight, it's, you know, it's decent. It's okay. It's a lot of grandiose, you know, messages coming from both characters, Megatron and Optimus. And the, like you said, it's with Grimlock. I don't know whether do I believe Grimlock would become a Decepticon more than I believe Megatron would become an Autobot? what do you want to do here? It's, you know, he's got a pretty good point. He's probably been fed a lot of images, and it's been a trope in a lot of movies with, like science fiction movies where, you know, the human race is just, you know, we're going to destroy ourselves. So why am I going to fight to protect you if you're just going to kill yourselves anyway? So, you know, that's a trope that's used quite often. And
we're an awful species.
Yeah. Terrible. So yeah, I get it. There's definitely a reason for why he would want to switch sides, but I don't know. The fight was okay. I kind of understand the military's point or their position. We're in this spot. You know, we've got everyone together. They're all sitting right there. We can just drop a bomb on them and end them all. it all kind of works for me. As far as the art goes, it's continuation of the last two issues. The art's decent. If I put myself back in, what was this, 2002? If I put myself back there, this art was just phenomenal. I couldn't get more of this art. I was loving every single page I was looking at. And that was 2002 Daryl, just reading Dreamwave comics. I was loving every minute of it. Compared to today, it's got its issues, and that's, you know, they're deserved, but it still holds up. It's got a place, and I don't mind looking at it. It's still readable, right? As someone like myself who's art first and story second, I'm still not put off by it. Definitely not put off by it as much as I am by Tom Scioli's art. So, I mean, I can still read this. I haven't thrown away this stuff or turned it into mulch. So
that's good.
Yeah.
You haven't mulched any Tom Scioli books, though, because I know you bought all the Tom Scioli Transformers versus G.I. Joe books.
I did stop that one. I never completed that Tom Scioli Transformers G.I. Joe run.
Oh, you didn't?
No, okay. I stopped. I had to. I couldn't do it.
All right. I admire your restraint.
I would like to mention quickly that Daryl's hatred for Tom Scioli is the reason I got the first issue of the GoBot series, just to see what it was like. And yeah, I get it. I get it.
The stuff in the Transformers G.I. Joe one was worse. His stuff in G.I. and in GoBots was a little better.
Oh, God. All right.
Because he had already done a whole series.
Yeah, and he had so many other characters in the G.I. Joe one he had to fit in there.
And don't forget about the G.I. Joe movie adaptation.
Oh, God. Yeah, I did buy that, though. I did get that. Anyway, yeah, it's readable. I'm enjoying the nostalgia kick that this is giving.
Keep in mind that this came out, this is like after nearly 10 years of no Transformers comics, nearly 10 years of no like G1 focused Transformers. Like Transformers have been beasts for a long time, with the exception of the RID show.
Yeah, RID was still going, I think it was, or it had just ended.
And Armada was coming like that year, that fall, Armada, the Transformers Armada cartoon.
Yeah, started. And there's, I don't know whether this appeared in the book, but there's in the scans that we have, there's this image in the middle of the book of this huge scene, right? Do you get that? I mean, is it in the middle of the book? You have it right there, right?
Yeah.
And that's
the
got
paper one has a different image.
And that's got the Armada Megatron on that. So that would have been a huge tease for people that didn't know that this was coming yet.
Well, I think the last issue, maybe all of them have been teasing their Armada series.
Okay.
Yeah, because the Armada series ran concurrently with the G1 stuff, because that was, because, you know, that was the, that Hasbro gave them the license. The Pat Lee wanted to do the G1 stuff, but Armada was the current toy, so right, Hasbro wanted them to.
When the Armada book came out in July 2002.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's actually advertised. I'm holding the physical copy in my hands. On the back cover is a Transformers Armada advertisement for the calendar.
Cool.
So I mean, with all that in mind, they've put, like, for this incarnation of G1, they've kind of like done a bit of the 90s extreme version, where you've got the murdering humans, you've got the Autobots and Decepticons using curse words like damn and hell. Oh my, they're actually cursing. I mean, so it's you know, I think the dialogue it just comes off as a little cheesy now. But yeah, all right. Scott, issue 3, what are your thoughts here?
I thoroughly enjoyed rereading it. Like I said when you asked me in the beginning, the art has, like, the art is really, really cool, and I loved it back in the day. And just looking at it now, I can find a few moments where it's off, but there's one shot of, what's his name, Halo or Halo, whatever it is, after Prime drops him, where he's, like, the coat's flaring out, and I think that's a really cool image, even though it's not robots. But some of the artwork is really, really good. As far as the story goes, I loved where this was going, and my biggest takeaway from reading this is I think Megatron, weird dialogue aside sometimes, I think Megatron's actually scary in this book. He's really imposing, like, goes out, murders Lazarus, he's got the the activated Autobots with his minions just playing with them, and he feels like he's imposing. He has an actual plan. He does not feel like a Saturday morning cartoon villain in here, and that's really, really cool. And
yeah.
On the flip side, Prime feels like a heroic Prime as opposed to what happened at the end of the first IDW run, where he was kind of, you know, just not sure of what to do or anything. This one, he feels real determined. I love that part where he picks up Halo and he's like, "Where is it?" screaming into the walkie-talkie and deafening that guy. The only other thing is, I had to look at the one panel a lot where Prime pulls out his ion blaster because I could not figure out where it was coming from at first.
Yeah, like, that's what I'm talking about with the weird camera angle. Because
the setup
is like two pages before that.
Yeah, he pulls the gun out from his crotch.
Well, no, it's like two pages before that. His back opens up, and he's like readying the gun when Megatron is giving a speech.
Oh, okay. The camera angles are weird, and like during the fight, I had trouble figuring out who was all in one scene because I feel like there's one scene there where Soundwave's arm is choking Wheeljack, but then Sideswipe is punching Starscream, and there's too much going on in such a small panel. But I love the book. It's so much fun, and I'm going to go back and reread through it all while you guys review it, just because I want to relive all this. It's just so much fun.
And Jeremy, what are your thoughts?
I'm enjoying the story overall. There are some issues that I have, like particularly Daryl brought up the Seekers playing with like the pieces of the Autobots. If these were humans, they would be playing with like a decapitated human head. So I would think that they would have respect for members of their own race just as beings and not do something like this. I mean, personally, I like it when the Transformers don't treat each other as robots. And that's kind of what I'm seeing here. And then also I like it when villains think that they are heroes. And this is very much a mustache twirling, like all of the Decepticons, when Starscream says, "Oh, you know, it's just going to be evil." And he's just happy about it. And I know that was G1, but I don't know. It's just, we've come so far now where if you get into the motivations of villains, the best ones are the ones that are thinking they're doing the right thing. I mean, if you look at the Megatron in the recently ended IDW stuff, even the new one, he thinks he's doing the right things. He just, his methods go too far. And this Megatron in this series is just, he's just wanting to make his own Cybertron, and he just hates the humans, and he knows it's evil, and he doesn't care. I do think Lazarus, so far, I can't remember what happens, and I'm not reading ahead, but so far, it's very much a wasted character. In the fight scene, where in the panel where you have the two sides facing off and blasting, in the panel that's above the Sideswipe and Starscream, that makes me think they're trying to mimic a scene from the intro of the G1 series.
Ah, okay.
I think that's what they were going for there.
Interesting.
But then the next page is just like, if you want to point out a good example of the horrible proportions on Dreamwave art, look at the Optimus Prime on the next page. It's horrible.
Oh my God.
And then my last issue with the story is, so this giant spaceship exploding didn't destroy the Transformers. So you're going to drop a bomb and cause a large explosion, which you know that they can survive horrible explosions. Why would you try it again? The plan makes no sense.
Yeah.
And obviously the military are not meant to win any favors with you, but yeah, I don't know. Overall though, the story has been, it's been interesting, fun. And just in my mind, it's just showing me how far we've come.
As far as the bomb goes, they might just be under the assumption that it might not destroy them, but maybe deactivate them. Because didn't the ship exploding deactivate them?
But they were also on the bottom of the ocean.
This is true.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of the problem with this series is they never really make it clear exactly like how the Arc 2, like destroying the Arc 2 got, like, okay, it crashed back onto Earth, but what exactly, like, how, where did the Transformers just got buried and scattered, but none of them were apparently damaged. Like, they were all shut down, but none of their bodies were apparently damaged very much. I don't really understand how that happens. Like, they weren't burned. They weren't, their bodies weren't, you know, crushed or anything, but they were all shut down.
Yeah. And Grimlock's able to rip off his insignia, but the explosion did nothing to him. But also, if you want to do something effective, say this is an EMP bomb, you know, something that might have an effect that's different.
Yeah. I guess the other thing I should mention, and this was also pointed out back in the day on those forums, is that this plan is very close to Megatron's plan in the Key to Vector Sigma, where he discovered that the key could turn organic matter into metal stuff, and he brought the key back to Earth and was, you know, turning the landscape into Cybertron. And a lot of people were like, hey, you just recycled that plot from Key to Vector Sigma. So,
little did we know.
Age of Extinction.
Exactly. Huh.
Michael Bay ripped off Dreamwave, which ripped off G1.
And yeah, I mean, I agree with you, Jeremy. Lazarus was pretty much like the first two issues built Lazarus up as, oh, this is the big bad. And then, you know, issue three, nope, gone. All right. I teased at the beginning that we had some comments from Yoshi, and we do. So Yoshi is giving his thoughts on Dreamwave G1 issue 3.
Okay, guys. Issue 3. I like the Insecticon cover, for whatever that's worth. I felt issue 3 was way better than issue 2. Not quite as good as issue 1, but that's because they're starting to present the Transformers. They're starting to make them speak, and that, I think, is where it's fallen on my face. Definitely worth the cover price, this issue. This was definitely a solid, solid issue. But maybe it's because I'm spending so much time writing my own Transformers comic book, and the one thing I scrutinize over the most is how everybody is supposed to talk, and maybe that's getting in the way a little bit, but I don't feel like, you know, again, this is a rebooted universe too, so I need to take that into account, and my brain is just a jumble, but Optimus Prime says some lines that just don't seem right or seem weak or seem like he's second-guessing himself. Not as badly as he does in the IDW universe. So far, this Prime is way better than the IDW Prime. But, he still seems a little hesitant, a little second-guessy. But, man, you know, as far as world-building is going, like, that's the part of this issue I'm definitely loving. I'm loving finding out the history of what happened, because, you know, it's just enough removed from the G1 stuff we grew up with that I'm interested to know all the aspects of what happened, why that particular ship crashed, what happened specifically with a spark plug, why he went from being worried about the Autobots to helping the Autobots to his death. Like, these are all things that are super interesting to me. I think Megatron is probably well represented here. I just like how he's thinking, has evilness and whatnot. Starscream doesn't quite feel right to me, and the art's starting to bug me now way more than it did in issue 2. But I, you know, at the time, I remember being like so thirsty for this. I didn't let it bother me then, and now I'm looking at it with hindsight. I'm looking at it with how critical I've been about art lately, that it's bugging me. But again, better than issue 2, not better than issue 1 in my opinion. A solid story, definitely a story regardless. I wouldn't have felt cheated out of my money. I may not have liked it if this book had come out now and I'd read it for the first time, but I don't feel like I was cheated out of my money. I might be thinking, either these guys don't understand the characters like I do, or I'm having a hard time accepting the personalities in this rebooted Transformer G1 universe. So that's my two thoughts. Talk to you guys later.
I think for the most part, I agree with Yoshi's thoughts. Although, like all the things he raised, like all those interesting plot points, I think those are all interesting plot points too. It's just a shame that the actual story doesn't address them at all and won't address them in future issues. So that's a little bit disappointing. Like they set up some really interesting things with that newspaper clipping in the first issue, but that really doesn't get addressed in any meaningful way going forward. Like you do eventually find out what happened with the Arc 2 crash, but you don't really get into like what happened to Spark Plug or what his motivation was or what anything really doesn't get resolved. It's not really the focus of the story at all, which is disappointing. I think we've said a lot for Transformers Dreamwave, Transformers Generation 1, Issue 3. Thanks, Yoshi, for sending in your comments, and we'll look forward to Issue 4 next week. All right, so I think we will move on to Transformers Media News.
Okay, in media news this week, we've got some concept art from Transformers Forge to Fight. So it's some concept art of Bumblebee, so take a look at that. We've also got Pacific Bike, and their officially licensed Norris 2.0 Transformers Edition bike. It's a bicycle. It's a little interesting looking. A lot of small tires on this, or not a lot, but two small tires, but all the... like the handlebars and the seat are up way high. So I don't know. Is this the style for bikes now? I don't know. But it's $280 or so.
It's in Indonesia. So maybe that's the style in Indonesia.
Maybe.
Maybe the bike folds up, make it easy to store.
Maybe. But yeah, so it's an interesting looking bike. Got another Hasbro Bring Home the Fun printable page. So this is a Mega Megatron coloring worksheet, so take a look at this if you want. And it's the it's just the Megatron from the Cyberverse series, so it's a nice little coloring sheet with Megatron being able to be colored in by your youngsters. If you've or you can color it in if you want, if you just feel the need to color a Megatron, go nuts. But yeah, it's kind of nice. Also, the first quarter conference call for Hasbro 2020, talking about the future of the movies and E1 collaborations and more was done. And I think we're going to talk about this a little bit more, so we're going to save it. But that was done. Yeah, you can take a look at that. Soundtrack Saturdays, that's continuing. And we've got another piece of audio from that. I guess we're putting these in the show now. We've never done this before, but let's just play the thing. Why not?
It's a lot of that.
It's great. That was great.
I figure we are a podcast, so if we're talking about a piece of music, we can just put a clip in there. It seems like a no-brainer for a podcast.
We've licensed it.
Yeah.
It's fair use for
it's a commentary. 10-second yes, clip. Yeah.
So there you go. That's another piece of clip, piece of audio. So we've determined it's from the third season, so there you are. In games news, Tiger LCD Transformers Generation 2 game. Remember we were talking about that handheld game that they're redoing or re-releasing? It's we've now got some stock images of that, and it looks pretty fun. It's going to retail for $15, and you're going to be able to find that all over the place. But yeah, so I like the way that they've kind of packaged this thing. It's just on a card with a bubble over top of the actual game, and they're saying it's 8+. It's going to take 2 AA batteries. I mean, 8+, you could probably play it younger than that. It's not very complex. It's pretty cool. It's fun. I'm hoping to get one at some point. Here in Canada, you can order them from EB Games. There's four in the series to choose from, and unfortunately, EB Games is just randomly picking one for you if you order it. You might get the Transformers one, but there's also a 75% chance that you won't. So, yeah, that sucks.
What? That's terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not good at all.
So
this is assuming that EB Games is still in business.
I'm pretty sure they'll survive this. Yeah. Cyberverse news, Transformers Bumblebee Cyberverse Adventures, which is the new name of Cyberverse. We've got a Finbar Martin concept art story, and it's just some more concept art from the show where they have a gallery, four galleries actually. So take a look at that, a bunch of different scenes and backgrounds and stuff. Especially if you can take a look and download them if you want, if you are using Zoom or Skype for meetings or, you know, classroom stuff, and you can put your background as being part of Cyberverse. It's fun. Episode 5 is available for Cyberverse, and episode 6 will be up on Monday, May the 4th. So take a look at those on, if you're waiting for the Cyberverse episodes to go up on YouTube, that's where you're at. Episode 6 will be up tomorrow. There are 26 episodes, so
they took like 3 weeks off. I don't know why they waited so long to put episode 5 and 6 up.
COVID.
But
maybe
the person was responsible for it couldn't get to a computer that had the file to upload it.
That's right.
Because they're up to like episode 10 on Cartoon Network, and they've also stopped showing new ones on Cartoon Network. I don't know why.
I don't know. All right, now we've got some new movie news, and this is pretty cool. So we've got news that came out earlier on in the week, and if you're a Donatrion, then Jeremy and I put out a special little episode, very short. I think it might have come in around 15, 20 minutes or so.
Yeah.
But it was just us chatting about this new news that came out on April 30th, and it was that there's an animated Transformers prequel in the works. It's being done by Toy Story 4's director Josh Cooley, and it's scripted by Ant-Man and the Wasp writers Andrew Barr and Gabrielle Ferrari. So this is pretty fun and exciting, an animated Transformers movie. It's got a pretty cool director behind it. He won an Oscar. Was it for Toy Story 4? I don't remember, but that's still pretty cool. He's an Oscar-winning director. But yeah, I'm pretty excited about this. Since Jeremy and I have already really talked about it, Charles, why don't you tell us what your thoughts are about this?
I am very interested. I think it's cool to finally get another Transformers animated movie. I think the fact that it's animated means the focus will be squarely on the Transformers, and apparently it's going to be set on Cybertron, so no humans on Cybertron in the distant past, I hope. So yes, that's already a plus for me. I'm a little bit iffy on the whole relationship between Optimus and Megatron. I think that's, we've gotten a lot of that in pre-war stuff, and I don't know. I mean, I know it's hard to get away from Optimus Prime and Megatron, and especially in the movie, like the movies where you have to kind of put your biggest characters forward. But I always think of Transformers as a property that supports a lot of different characters. So I would like to see a focus on other characters.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, and you know, the Autobot Decepticon conflict is more than just Optimus Prime and Megatron's personal beef. I feel like that always seems to get a lot of focus when it's really, I think it should be bigger than that. I'm curious, hopeful, cautiously optimistic. It's not Michael Bay, so I listened to your discussion with Jeremy, and you already had a little interaction with Josh Cooley, so hopefully, his words back to you about you know, trying to do something that will knock the fan socks off, I think he said, is encouraging and heartening. So I hope you ask him for an interview, Daryl. But yeah, I mean, I'm hopeful, but you know, hope is a lie. That's what Cyclonus taught me. So we'll see.
Yeah, well, what you're referring to is a tweet that I had sent out is I sent out this like tweet thread to and tagged Josh Cooley in it because I felt like with all this news, somebody needed to kind of tell him that, you know, there's a lot of cool stuff out there already. And we talked, Jeremy and I talked about this a lot already, but if you're not a Donatreon, then you may not have got the early access. So, I basically mentioned in my little tweet thread is that, you know, the animation, whatever way they wanted to go with animation, the 2D animation from the 86 movie was the gold standard that is generally accepted by the Transformers fandom. It was, you know, back in 86 it was done, and it still holds up for animation standards right now. The 3D animation that Josh Cooley works in generally is Transformers Prime holds up very, very well. And you know, there's two studios that do both of those things still, and you know, maybe go work with them. Now, as far as stories go, we do know that he is working from a script by Andrew Barr and Gabrielle Ferrari. But if those don't pan out, or if that one doesn't pan out, or if he's given the opportunity to direct again, there are some really great story opportunities in the comics from IDW Publishing, and I gave a bunch of lists. Top of the list for almost all fans of the comics is Last Stand of the Wreckers. I think we'd all love to see an animated movie of Last Stand of the Wreckers. You can get in and get out, and it's you really don't need a lot of backstory, like we were talking about in the little special there. But yeah, so there I said that to him as well, and that and I closed out by saying fairly similarly to what you had said is that I'm also very very cautiously optimistic about this. Bumblebee was good, but our hearts aren't ready to trust blindly quite yet. So. That was, and then he replied to me, which I really didn't expect. So that was kind of nice of him to do as well. And he said that he really appreciates me taking the time to write this up. His goal is to blow past any expectations and show something that the fans can't help but cheer at. So that was pretty fun. And I did reply to him, and I didn't ask for an interview because he's probably being inundated by that stuff right now. So anyway. But he does know, you know, he did acknowledge me, so that was really nice. But yeah.
Cool.
Scott.
Ask for the interview.
Yeah, I mean, I'll give you his Twitter account, and you can throw something at him. Scott, what are your thoughts on this whole thing? Are you just fed up with animation and you just don't want it anymore? I feel like you're just done with Transformers being animated. You want them live action or no action?
Live action 24/7 all the time. No, I like all of us, I was pretty pumped to hear this. And I mean, my dream would be that they do a 2D animation a la like the 86 movie. I am nowadays, I still love anything that's 2D animated over CG, but CG can, of course, be done really, really well. In fact, if this movie's done like CG, like the beginning of the Bumblebee movie, I'll take that. I mean, I think we all said that we'd take an entire movie of that scene.
Sure.
If they did it. So, yeah, I can't wait to see it. And I kind of like what you said, that, like, we're not ready to trust entirely again. We've been hurt too many times in the past.
Right.
I have been to see every live-action Transformers movie in the theater, like many of us. And aside from the Bumblebee movie, it's just gotten worse and worse. So, I'm hoping this will bring it back completely after all that. And yeah, I'm excited. I like Toy Story 4, too, and yeah, he did a good job. So
good. All right. Well, I'm going to put it out to the listeners now. Send us some feedback. Let us know what your thoughts on this are. And, you know, we got some solicitations, and we're going to talk about them, you know, in feedback today. But for everyone else out there, this was pretty big news this week, so we want to hear from you. What do you hope gets done?
We do have some feedback from a special listener.
Right.
Yoshi.
That's true. So why don't we throw to that and we'll see what Yoshi has to say.
Hey guys, so I read the Deadline article about the animated Transformers movie, the prequel that they're going to be doing. It's basically set before they come to Earth. And it's at least an aspect of it is focused on the relationship between Optimus Prime and Megatron. You know, I don't know. You know what I'm going to say. This isn't my Transformers. This isn't what I subscribed for. Everybody I seem to talk to is keen on knowing what life is like on Cybertron, want more Cybertron. I don't care. I also don't care about the relationship between Optimus Prime and Megatron. So the real challenge here is, can this director from Toy Story 4 and the writers from Ant-Man make me care? I'm pretty solid in the whole good versus evil, and that's the core of Transformers. And I'm not too concerned about the emotional relationship between Megatron and Optimus Prime. Other than bullet points, maybe, you know, touch on it, like, you know, they went to school together or they were forged in the same factory, whatever the fuck. Like, it's just not my curiosity. It's not where my curiosity is when it comes to Transformers. So, let's hope for the best. Let's see if they can do something that can make me care, because I want a Transformers visual media I can get behind again, I guess. So we'll see. I'd be curious about the director's history with Transformers, if they're fans, if this is just a gig, same with the writers. I'm sure that stuff will trickle out as we get closer to a release date. And that's my two cents, guys. Thanks.
That seemed to fit Yoshi's profile, I think.
And for the record, since you didn't ask me, I'm also cautiously optimistic.
Well, we talked about it already.
We talked about it on a Patreon exclusive thing that is That's not true. Early access, like you said.
It's true.
I have not seen Toy Story 4. I guess I am going to go see it, even though I'm sure it's going to make me sad. That keeps me away from the Toy Story movies, but it's on Disney Plus, so I'll watch it. And I apparently he did a good job. So, like I said, cautiously optimistic.
Good. You happy now, Jeremy?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's good. All right. Well, moving on, we got one more bit of movie news, and that's crazy because, you know, you don't expect to get much movie news at all during this time. And we've got two bits of news. Hasbro's CEO, Brian Goldner, mentioned that they've got 21 movies in development for various properties, and one of them was confirmed to be Transformers. Now, they've got a live-action movie in pre-production. I would assume it's in pre-production because this is coming up quick, actually. But the news is that the next live-action movie is set to be released on June 24th, 2022, and it's already got a script in development. It's actually two scripts are in development. One is by murder mystery scribe James Vanderbilt, and the other is by John Wick 3 writer Joby Harold. Now, I remember this name from something else. Is this person, Joby Harold, write something for Transformers before?
Well, they were in the writer's room from the that before the Bumblebee movie.
Okay.
I think, I don't know if both scripts were, but at least the Beast Wars one might have come from the writer's room.
Well, that's the next point, is that they're saying that the James Vanderbilt one is based in the Transformers Beast Wars universe, while the other one, the Joby Harold one, is in the Bumblebee movie universe. Now, this is kind of interesting because, you know, you're going in two different directions with two different scripts. The question I want to pose to the group here is the Transformers cinematic universe, in quotations, Mark, is it ready to jump into a different universe like Beast Wars? Jeremy, I'll start with you.
Okay. I, as much as I love Beast Wars, I don't know if the general public is ready for a shift. I don't think that movie would make as much as a more traditional Transformers movie. It's sad, but I think that's the truth. I would think if you introduce the Beast concept within another movie, that then like a sequel could be all Beast Wars, then it might work more.
Mm-hmm. All right. Charles.
Yeah, I tend to agree with Jeremy that, I mean, Transformers are a bit of a, they're at a lower point in their movie franchise right now. I mean, Bumblebee didn't do quite as much as the other, movies. I think people have gotten turned, like, they were turned off by the last few Michael Bay movies. So I think that it's going to take at least another movie, like, to push Transformers back into the general consciousness again. Maybe after that you could, and like Jeremy said, if you maybe stealth put in a Beast Wars concept in that movie, then you can build off the next movie and make it full on Beast Wars. But yeah, I mean, you definitely would have to change the overall plot and story. I mean, you can't make it about like going back 4 million years. I mean, there's too much backstory to cram into a Beast Wars concept if you're doing it like the original cartoon, like, mm-hmm. you know, all the 4 million years ago, and they're the descendants of the Autobots and Decepticons and all that stuff. So if you might have to streamline the concept and maybe make it, I don't know if you set it on another planet where it's just animals or something. I don't know, but yeah, it's definitely a niche thing that is, I don't think is in the general public consciousness. So like that Transformers could become animals too. Really? I mean, other than Dinobots, I think that's the only thing that's broken through and maybe Soundwave's cassettes.
Yeah. Scott, what do you think of the ability to get another Transformers movie out so quickly? And I mean, it's live action, sure, but do you think it should be Beast Wars? Do you think it should stick with continuing the Bumblebee movie aspect or their universe, I guess?
My heart tells me Beast Wars, because Beast Wars was on when I was in like late elementary school, early middle school, and of course I loved it, and you know, I have such fond memories of Beast Wars. But I agree with Jeremy, I agree with Charles, like I don't think that's gonna be what they need to do if they want to make money. Because while, you know, as Transformers fans, we love Beast Wars, or, you know, we at least know that it was a good property, and they could do a lot of really cool stuff with it. I think if they turned it into a live action movie, it wouldn't be anywhere near the Beast Wars we'd want it to be. And it would just boil down to just Transformers turning into beasts with some crazy dumb plot that we don't want. Most likely, I could see them doing the Bumblebee sequel, because Bumblebee did, while it didn't do as well as the others, it did okay. Bumblebee is a very marketable face and very marketable toy, so that's probably what they're going to do. But someday, I hope to get more Beast Wars stuff, something out of it, because I love Beast Wars so much.
Well, again, to the listeners out there, what are your thoughts on the next live-action movie? Is it something that should be done with Beast Wars? Is that the next logical step, or should they continue the Bumblebee universe to set a firm, you know, foot on the ground and get the universe kind of established before they start deviating from that, from where they are? Let us know. And with that, we'll end media news.
All right. And we will move on to convention news.
Okay, in convention news this week, a couple online conventions. WonderCon has been doing, and they will be doing some WonderCon at home panels, which are apparently they're going to be panels that would have been at WonderCon, but since it was canceled, obviously they're putting them just on YouTube. And a few days, like last week, they had one from Cyberverse. It says Racing Into Season 3. It was moderated by Jack Conway, who's the head writer for Cyberverse, and it included Randolph Hurd, Gavin Hignite, Zach Atkinson, and Maycat, and Dan Sal Garrolo, who are all on the writing team, and then Jeremy Levy, who played Bumblebee, Perceptor, and Jetfire, and Ryan Andes, who plays Grimlock and Shockwave, and they're talking about Cyberverse season 2, and then up through episode 5 of season 3. So basically, if you could watch it on YouTube, if you're in the U.S., it wouldn't have any spoilers for anything after. Although the moderator did mention in a vague way that you would be able to see the rest if you knew how to watch video on the internet. He hinted that you're able to watch it. But anyway, it was a good panel. I watched the whole thing. It was nice seeing kind of the inspirations that the voice actors took in finding their voices for the different characters, and hearing from the writers like their favorite bits that they were able to sneak in. So yeah, I thought it was a great panel, and you know, if you haven't watched it, check it out.
Yeah, I did watch it, and I also enjoyed it, although I have one kind of really thing that bugged me, and
I know what you're going
to
say. I
have to mention it. I mean, you know, it hurts me a little bit because clearly these folks are really into Transformers. They've taken so many references from throughout the 35-year history of Transformers. They clearly love the original animated movie. They know all about it. But then they brought it up in the panel, so I feel like I can hit them for this. Mm-hmm. They talk about how there's this quote unquote debate on how you pronounce Quintesson. There's no debate. You guys made up a new pronunciation for the show and forced it on us. Never in any previous Transformers media has anyone ever pronounced Quintesson. It's always been Quintesson.
I'm wondering if any of them were involved with the new Voltron series, which had quintessence as a thing.
Maybe
that's the only thing I can think of.
Or if they're taking it from, didn't they call her Quintessa in last night? Yeah. I'm wondering if they're taking it from that.
Maybe. Well, yeah. So the planet that the Quintessons are from was called Quintessa. That's true. But the Quintessons were always the Quintessons. They were never the Quintessons. And, you know, I just have to say, shame on you, Cyberverse writers, for pretending that there's some debate about how to properly pronounce it. It's never been Quintessons.
If we ever get any of them on for an interview, we should just add into the rapid fire stuff Quintesson or Quintesson, and why.
I mean,
if
it's like
Quintesson, just kick them off.
Yeah.
It's like if I said, hey, we're just going to start saying it's Optimus Prime. His name is Optimus.
He's the Canadian
and there's a debate. There's a debate about whether or not it's Optimus or Optimus. And, you know, that's a debate in the fandom. So you can, you know, it's like tomato, tomato. But no, it's always been Optimus. It's always been Quintessons. It's never been Quintesson.
All right.
So I love Cyberverse. I think Cyberverse is an excellent show. Everyone should watch it. It's a really great Transformers show. It really gets Transformers, and they did a phenomenal job. Mm-hmm. Just they didn't pronounce Quintesson right.
All I got from that is now I want someone to make an Optimus Prime that transforms into a moose.
Maybe in your Beast Wars movie.
Yeah, there you go. There you go, Charles. You've set up the Beast Wars movie.
Optimus Primal.
All right. Well, let's have Charles. Maybe we can calm you down with this next news. Wales Comic Con has done a series of panels this past weekend online, and one of them is called Live Comics Galore with Johnny Vegas. But this is an online panel including many comic creators, including Andrew Wildman and John Paul Bove. And I haven't had a chance to watch this one yet, but you know, anywhere John Paul is at, you know, fun is likely to follow.
Hijinks ensue.
Yes. I would definitely recommend checking that out, and you know, I'm sure it'll be fun.
Johnny Vegas is hilarious too, so that whole panel has got to just be a blast.
Yeah, I'd never heard of him, but with a name like Johnny Vegas, you got to be fun. So anyway, that panel is on Twitch. We'll have a link here, and hopefully the link stays up. I'm not sure if it goes away because we don't usually link to Twitch. But if it does, we'll try to find it and update the link if it's on YouTube or something. But that is it for convention news.
All right, and we will finish up the show with some feedback. All right, two voicemails. The switchboards are lighting up.
And some email.
Yes. First voicemail from John 4X Levengood, one of our favorite voicemail senders.
Hi, guys. John 4X Levengood here again. So I just heard you doing an Patreon exclusive on the Transformers animated movie project coming out, and I'm super excited. I read the article a little earlier, and where I'm excited is they're mentioning that they're going to kind of focus on the relationship between Optimus Prime and Megatron. Now, the video game War for and Fall of Cybertron series, as well as the current ongoing, is set at or just before the war that started. However, in both of those cases, Megatron and Optimus Prime were already kind of at opposite ends of the political spectrum, if not outright in fighting it out already. And I know there's been other storylines that got into the background and stuff like that, but I also know that in either an animated or live action, we really haven't seen much of the pre-war era other than in flashbacks or one-off stories. And this is where I'm getting excited about that. This is going to get I think this is going to be a fun movie, and I hope that the writers and the director do it justice, and it sounds like the pedigree is there, so hopefully it all hops up, and I really want to see that relationship between the friendly relationship between Optimus Prime and Megatron. Thanks again, guys. Bye.
All right, cool. Thanks for that feedback, John. And I think one of our other favorite Donatrons, Fat Rob, he's also got a comment about the prospect of the animated movie.
Hey guys, just wanted to share my thoughts on the new Transformers animated movie announcement and to say thanks for giving the listeners the opportunity to share their two cents on this, what I anticipate is going to be a very hot topic within the Transformers community. I'm just going to come right out and say it. I approach this announcement with a healthy dose of skepticism and pessimism, but I will freely admit that that is pretty much all on me. The bar being the 86 movie, obviously action cartoons are pretty much non-existent at this point. And if you were to watch any cartoon on one of the more prominent cartoon channels, you're going to see that the art style is far different. Another point of interest for me is the tone and the focus of an animated Transformers movie. For me, while I enjoyed Bumblebee, the movie, I couldn't help but come out of the theater thinking that it was more of Charlie's story and less of Bumblebee's journey throughout the film. For me, the Transformers' appeal lies not only in their awesome designs, but the characters themselves. And their personalities are, I think we can all agree, are very relatable and interesting enough to remain in place through so many different incarnations, whether they were cartoons or comics, etc., etc. But beyond mostly blurred sequences and fight scenes, there's been little actual storytelling among this race of characters. That's another thing that I really hope that we see finally in these films. But honestly, I'm not going to hold my breath. I'm sorry to sound like such a Debbie Downer, but those are my actual true thoughts on the announcement. But thankfully, we all have different media to refer to, and definitely a lot of toys that we can enjoy. So there's that, right? So anyway, I'll go ahead and sign off now and just say stay safe, everybody. And thanks, Transmissions guys, for being the best. All right. See y'all later.
All right. Thanks, Rob. And yeah, I should say Fat Rob. That's P-H-A-T. So, you know, like the 90s. So the 90s are back. But yeah, thanks. Rob's been a long time contributor and Donatrion. So thanks for your thoughts. And yeah, I tend to agree about the live action movies and not enough focus on the Transformers. That's been my complaint for the live action movies for a long time. So, but I hope with this prospect of an animated movie where the focus is all on the Transformers as characters will be very good. I hope.
I got to congratulate
we'll see.
Fat Rob for finding a loophole as to getting in more than 90 seconds of a feedback. Well done. I agree with Rob, though. It's, you know, the Bay movies have needed work, and everyone kind of agrees, except to, unless your name is Eric Crownover, then they're perfect pieces of movie magic. I think the Bumblebee movie had, you know, it had some definite, you know, high points, but you got to remember where the bar was set, right? It was set so low that, you know, anything was going to be a little bit better than the Michael Bay movies was going to show, was going to get a lot more of a rounding of approval from the fandom. So showing scenes, CGI scenes on Cybertron that looked semi G1, that was, you know, that right off the top was going to get a huge response. So yeah, I think anything is better than what we had gotten. So yeah, it's, I think we're all pretty excited about it, and it's, it's going to be fun.
I want to add in one thing. I've had discussions with some of my students who are younger about these movies, and the younger generation really, really bothers me because they see stuff on my desk that's like Transformers, and they're like, oh man, did you see like all the movies and everything? It's like, yeah. And then I lose all respect for them. No, that's not entirely true. I do understand why they love them, but they, for some reason, they never understand why I don't. They don't get it. But
you're there to teach them. You're there to teach them why.
Oh, I do. Actually, fun side fact, every year, like right before Christmas, when we have like a half day, I turn it into a movie day, and I put on the 86 Transformers movie, and I make them watch it every year.
Fantastic.
Nice.
And surprisingly, I've gotten a few to be really into it, so I'm doing my part.
Nice. Good job. You're that's the indoctrination we can get behind in the public school system.
Yeah. You know?
I try my best.
All right. And we also got a comment from Will. He's also talking about the news about the animated movie. Will says he left this comment on our Patreon. He says, I'm cautiously optimistic. Other than a few scenes in the first film, I hated the live action movies, so a move away from them is very welcome. The creative team is promising. Toy Story 4 was pretty great. And the freedom that animation will bring could mean something really dazzling. Looking forward to seeing the character designs. I'm prepared to be disappointed given the horrific track record of Transformers films since 2007. But for now, it feels like a step in the right direction. So, yeah, similar thoughts.
I would say so.
Will, we do have another email from you that we'll get to, but show's running a little long, so we'll push that till next week. But thanks for sending in your email as well, and we will answer your question next week
when Charles isn't here.
Yeah. I hope I'm here next week.
So do we. Answer Will's question.
Yeah, I know he's been waiting 2 weeks now, so yeah. Sorry about that, Will. That was my fault.
No, blame Hasbro for announcing some movies.
Yeah.
All right. I think that will do it for this episode of Transmissions. Scott, Dr. Pants, can you tell us where we can find you on the internet outside of Transmissions?
Thank you. You can find me at on YouTube on the Nerdstradamus channel. We also have a website, Nerdstradamus.com, and we're on all the social medias, Nerdstradamus. We you know, do a lot of fun nerdy things, mostly video gaming, but every now and then we do dabble in the robots. So, but yeah.
That's I love fun. Robots.
Oh. I do love robots.
I was like, who played from the soundboard?
It was pretty good. I thought it was from the soundboard for a second. I love robots. There it is. There it is. God, I love that song.
All right. Well, thanks everyone for listening, and we will see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Later.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening to this episode of Transmissions. But just because this episode is over doesn't mean the Transformers fun has to stop. Join us and other Transformers fans on our Discord chat server by visiting transmissionspodcast.com/discord. If you would like to learn more about how you could support the Transmissions Podcast, just visit transmissionspodcast.com/support. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you again next week. Hey guys, so I've read issue 2, and I gotta thank you all from the bottom of my heart.
That's the wrong one.
Sorry, yeah, sorry. That's what we call in the business, my bad. I'm glad I'm just not crazy.
Jerry's still out.
Well, okay.
You skipped Earth Wars interview with Simon Furman.
Oh, did I? Simon Furman did an interview about Earth Wars.
Great.
Do you know more about it?
No.
Perfect.